of adjustment, but easy on the curves.
Not a glitch, Kakadu. Just got dyslexia, okay?
This out on you! This out on your cow!
Welcome, foolish mortals.
It is with deepest pride and greatest pleasure that we welcome you tonight.
Obscure Disney Podcast.
Brought to you by JJ's Incredible Cookie Company, the perfect treat for your dimension jumping child.
To all who have come to this podcast, welcome. You're listening to the Obscure Disney Podcast. I'm Steven.
And I'm Ryan.
And with new episodes coming out every Tuesday and Thursday, why not subscribe to this podcast by simply finding us on Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcast from. Simply look for Obscure Disney Podcast or go to obscuredisneypodcast.com.
Mm-hmm. Ladies and gentlemen, empty your spit valves and rosin up your bows.
Excuse me?
It's an orchestra joke.
It's an orchestra joke. Okay, that was pretty bad.
So, you know, when you play a brass instrument, they have a spit valve because you're putting a lot of humidity into the instrument and it all gathers in places. So you have a little valve that you open up and it dumps out all your, they call it a spit valve.
Speaking of spitting, oh my gosh.
What'd you choke on? You choke on my joke? I was laughing at it. Goodness.
Legit.
And then rosining up your bow is where you put the resin stuff on your bow so you can play.
Okay.
Orchestra jokes. Okay. It's highbrow here at Obscure Disney Podcast.
As we talk about spit valves. Yeah. There you go.
There you go.
Highbrow.
No, but actually what we're talking about is Fantasia.
Fantasia.
Yes, movie number 3 on our movie marathon.
Number 3, we had to find it. We had to go about all of the ways necessary to actually find it to watch.
Right.
Because we don't have it in the house, apparently.
I don't own it. And I think
imagine
you can,
why.
I mean, I definitely watched it as a kid a lot. I don't know how.
Yeah.
Seeing it as an adult, I'm like, wow, how did this hold my attention as a child?
Yeah.
It barely held your attention as an adult, once again.
Well, it was... I did have to ask myself, is this too artistic for me? Is that the problem?
Oh, is it too fancy pants for
you? I was wondering.
You need to upgrade your pants?
apparently, I need to put on my penny loafers and my
your pantaloons.
Yeah, because I was like, I like you know, the orchestra or going to plays and that kind of thing. I really enjoy that stuff a lot.
Right.
So it's not that was a problem, but I literally was like, what is this
right.
that we're watching?
It is a very obscure, artsy, yeah. Kind of out of the box.
Yeah, I put very abstract.
Abstract is a good word for it. Especially at the very beginning, where it literally is just abstract shapes and colors.
Yeah.
It very much reminds me, I don't think you've seen this movie yet, but it reminds me very much of Ratatouille.
Okay.
In Ratatouille, when he's eating things, he sees abstract colors and patterns to signify taste. And I feel like it's a lot like that.
Seems awfully psychedelic.
Mm-hmm.
He must have been eating our cookies.
Oh. Right. What kind of cookies you making when I'm not around?
Isn't that what you called JJ's cookies at the bottom?
Oh, the JJ's incredible cookies.
Yeah, you were calling them that, right? Maybe?
No, yeah. I don't. Oh, the multicolored cookies on the bottom of the patch. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. But the very beginning is that very weird, just color concept, basically. Mm-hmm. And like I said to you, I feel like this whole movie was an experiment for the animators. Just go wild, see what you can do, see what you can animate, push yourself to animate things that you haven't animated before. Because if you noticed on this movie, they had a lot of textures and a lot of different movements that they had never animated before. And so I feel like that was kind of what this was. Outside of just an experiment with music, it was like giving the artist an opportunity to try something.
Yeah. A $2 million experiment.
Is that how much it cost?
It was $2 million, like $2.24 million to make or something like that.
If anyone wants to fund a $2.2 million experiment for me,
well, I am all down. And that was in the 1940s. money. So with inflation, can you even imagine what that would work out to be today?
Lots more.
A lot more than two.
This is not a math podcast. Do not put me on the spot like that.
We know that somebody out there has already pulled up the inflation calculator to figure out what it is. Yeah, we're not about that though.
No.
I thought it was a really daring movie for them to make their third movie out in 1940. Like, I can't even imagine like where their minds were at when they came up with this as a concept. Like, we've just done Pinocchio,
right?
And now we're going to do Fantasia, where it's just lights and movement and stuff. But I loved it because, well, sort of. I've been to a lot of laser shows. If you've been to a planetarium anywhere in your local cities, I'm sure you've seen a laser show like this where you go and you see like U2 or something like that, all done to laser lights.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty freaking phenomenal. Oh, like, okay. It's super fun to go see those kinds of things.
Uh-huh.
And that's a lot of what I felt like I was watching. But it's crazy to think that that was done in the 1940s with all animators. And is that how they created it? Was literally people drawing with watercolors, basically?
It was traditionally animated, yes. But that's why I think it was such an experiment, because they did such crazy things with their artwork. It wasn't like, oh, here, draw a ball bouncing around to this song. Mm-hmm. It was, how does the song make you feel? Animate that with color, sound, and movement. And it's like, wow, that is a difficult task to try to tackle, I think, for anybody. To go that abstract, you know, and it gets a little bit more story driven and character driven towards the end of the movie.
Yeah.
But I honestly forgot how long it was.
Right?
Like, I, as a kid, it didn't register with me how long this was.
Yeah.
But when I saw how long the runtime was on this, I was like, what? 2 hours?
It was 2 hours and 3 minutes.
Hours of this? I was like, wow. Because
Pinocchio is what? Like an hour, 23 minutes, I think, or something?
It's a pretty short film.
A lot of their first animations were pretty short. So for them to have this much and that.
I think what they did, though, is separate it out into teams.
Yeah.
So it wasn't the entire company all working on one part. It was groups of animators working on specific pieces of music. And so they didn't have to worry about the overarching story. They were just like, we're working on this one song.
Yeah.
You know? And some of these songs are really long, but still, it's just the one song.
And I recognize most of the music.
Good.
Right?
That, I think that was their goal, too, to kind of take popular music that people recognize and put it into a new format.
But a lot of the music seemed very Christmassy to me. Like, obviously, there's the Nutcracker song.
Right. They had the Nutcracker suite in there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's obviously straight up
very Christmassy.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end, they had the Ave Maria song.
Right.
Which is pretty Christmassy. I think it's just the very recognizable orchestra pieces sometimes come from ballets and things like that that have become synonymous with Christmas time.
Mm-hmm.
There were very non-Christmas things in there also.
Right. So that was going to be the question that I asked for you. Do you think that, like, Fantasia maybe have helped influence some of those songs become Christmas classics because they were in a show that was kind of loosely Christmassy and people would watch it? Because I looked, it was released in like November of 1940, so it would have been right before Christmas season.
Okay.
Maybe it was a big Christmas release that they had for 1940. If anybody knows, let me know, because I'm dying to know.
Well, but I feel like the Nutcracker had been out for much longer.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah,
before
So
it may have influenced some people in that direction, or it may have just been coincidental that they picked a lot of things that feel like Christmas.
Yeah.
You know, I have, or maybe it was just cheaper to get the Christmas stuff. You know? Maybe. Who knows?
It's in public domain.
Right. But if there was ever a time that the world needed a little bit of classical pretty music, it was in the 1940s.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I read that that hindered their distribution for that too, because they couldn't release it in Europe because of World War II, right? They couldn't release it over there, so it was only released sporadically in the United States in multiple theaters, and the music that they used at the time, like the production they put behind it, most theaters weren't able to play. And so they weren't able to release it as quite as widely as they wanted to, but it still said that it made $74 million.
I think the recording of their music they did in a symphonic way,
right,
that was meant to be played on like a surround sound.
Yeah.
And I don't think a lot of theaters at the time had the surround sound capability.
They didn't have Dolby 7.1.
They did not.
Surround sound.
No.
Lucas, LTD, whatever it is.
They don't have the thing that blasts your eardrums at the beginning of every film. We'll show you how powerful our music is right away.
OMG. It's been so long since I've heard that in a theater, actually.
Really?
Do they still do it?
Oh, yeah.
Huh.
Whatever it is.
Not at the AMC, apparently.
Oh.
Apparently not there.
Shade to they're the AMC.
Well, they're too busy trying to sell us, though, the M&Ms. That two-minute commercial at the beginning of that. Anyway. But, what's up with the dancing mushrooms?
I loved the dancing mushrooms. Let's be honest.
This is the only kind of mushrooms you like?
These are the only kind of mushrooms I like.
Animated Disney mushrooms.
Gross on everything else. But that was during the Nutcracker suite.
Yeah.
And this was the first time in the movie that they have character. And I thought the mushrooms were super cute.
Yeah, they were cute.
Dancing mushrooms. And,
right.
But right before that were the fairies of weather,
right.
And this is a theme in Fantasia that I didn't pick up as when I was younger, but there's a lot of naked people in this show.
Seriously, there were, right? Like, I felt like I was like at an X-rated cartoon of sorts. And
no, now to be fair, they're all women. There's no naked guys in the show. There's only a bunch of naked women,
and most of them are naked. Being fair,
right? This is not equality. And most of them are just naked from the waist up, but some of them are like fully naked. And obviously it's not anatomical, but still you're like, wow, that is that's a lot of naked.
Yeah.
Because the little fairies are naked.
Yeah.
The cherubs during the whole centaur kind of thing, the Greek mythology section,
right,
are naked. During Chernobog at the end, some of the spirits are naked. I'm like, that is a lot of naked.
Yeah.
Is it artsy? Do we get away with it by saying, oh, it's art, it doesn't matter, it's art.
Right. Okay, so it kind of reminds me of my other favorite show of the year, Greatest Showman.
Okay.
When P.T. Barnum, he has done all of this wackadoodle stuff that everybody's into, but then he decides that he wants to do something more appropriate, more accepting of the mass, of the upper class.
Sure.
Do you think, and I'm just totally asking you this off the cuff here, do you think that it might have been Walt Disney saying, I want to do something more upper scale, creative, something more for the sophisticated folks that maybe don't like animation?
Kind of the
like I've done
black
things for,
tie kind
do you
of.
Think so? Was it like a black tie attempt? I was getting a vibe of that, but you know.
It is extremely highbrow and artsy, outside of the fact that they have a narrator almost that introduces each piece and gives you some history.
But that even felt very artsy because you see the orchestra tuning up at the beginning and spitting their valves, I think you said.
Emptying their spit valves.
You see how upper class I am,
he
y'all?
He is fancy. He's spitting on valves. And then, but, like, they do, like, weird little kitschy things, too, where they, like, knock down the chimes,
right,
and stuff. You're like,
yeah,
what is going on with this?
Like, I was getting ready for her to come out and be like, never, never, never good to me.
Thank you.
Whatever that was. I know. It was so good.
No, I could see it possibly as an experiment to see how fancy they could get and see if maybe they couldn't tap into the orchestra ballet going public.
Yeah,
who knows,
could be. It
or
felt
maybe
like
they were just tired of trying to write story and wanted to do something more abstract.
That could be it too. Well, because I think I read that too, that the Mickey scene with tell me all about the Mickey
the
scene.
The Sorcerer's Apprentice.
Oh yeah.
Which was originally meant to be its standalone short.
Yeah.
But they sunk too much money into
right.
it. Maybe that's where half the budget came from, was trying
it
to
was.
Do the Mickey thing.
Mm-hmm.
So literally they spent all this time creating the most, honestly, the most popular scene out of Fantasia. It's pretty much the only thing that anyone ever remembers.
Oh, and you remember it.
You know, fun fact, the wizard in that is called Yensid.
Okay.
Which is Disney spelled backwards.
Oh, okay.
So, anyway, so they have this whole thing with Mickey trying, you said they were trying to make him more popular again?
Right. He had fallen out of popularity, and it was their way to reintroduce him back to the public in a fun way. And so Walt wanted to have this created. It ran so far over budget that they couldn't release as a short, and was like, we got to put in something else. And so they packaged it into Fantasia.
Was Fantasia already in production when they did that? Or did they say, let's go with more music things and build something around it?
I don't know. Oh. I don't know what it really said about it. But I was curious about that. Walt was the voice of Mickey in the original days, right?
Yeah.
So was that Walt's voice that we then heard for him? Was that Walt doing Mickey?
We'd have to look into that. I don't know.
Because our copy did not have the credits on the end.
Well, don't give away the secrets of how... Jeez.
It's legal.
We got our stuff all legally, people.
Right? It was legal. I just don't
it was just like a couple lines that maybe Walt might have done. I mean, it didn't sound quite like Walt. Walt's Mickey was very... was a little bit more high-pitched and a bit more squeaky.
Oh, okay.
So...
You've heard it before.
Yeah. I'm sure you've heard it too, but... I haven't done a study of putting Walt's Mickey against, you know, more contemporary Mickeys.
Well, point it out next time you hear it. I'm dying to hear it.
Okay. Well, it's easy to look up a clip of Walt doing Mickey.
That's just fun when it's organic.
Okay. Next time we're organically watching a Mickey short from before the 1930s.
Listen, it happens a lot in this house.
So anyway, did you have a favorite song that you liked watching?
Not necessarily. They were all fine. But Mickey becoming an axe murderer to the broom?
Oh, I forgot about that part.
Say what now?
Yeah. Well, you had to stop the broom.
This was the 1940s solution for Mickey to taking an axe to the broom and cutting it up. And wow. I tell you what, vintage Disney was dark, y'all.
He's aggressive. You thought that was darker than Pinocchio?
I mean, it was all dark. I'm continually amazed by the darkness that... Listen, I love it. I'm not complaining. But
it was... I guess it was a solution, and it was a way to get it to fit with the song, too.
Because the
song at that point had a very harsh beat to it, so you might as well do something harsh.
Yeah.
So,
and the broom sequence that happened when they all of that I can see happening. I just wondered if there was another way. Like, it almost feels like today he would have just poured water on him and then it would have multiplied like a gremlin.
He couldn't have done that. The brooms were moving water. If they got multiplied by water, then they would have been multiplied.
That could have been how it happened. I don't know. I just feel like that's the way it would be written today if it was released. You know?
I think Mickey would still chop him up with an axe.
No.
Suddenly Seymour style, Little Shop of Horror style, feeding him to Audrey.
It was great, so it's a tribute to Halloween.
Right. Happy Halloween, everyone, here in August still.
But I agree with you with the fairies at the beginning of the movie. Kind of, I really was thinking, like, is this the origin story of Tinkerbell? Is that what I'm seeing now?
They looked very Tinkerbellish.
It does, right?
Even though Peter Pan wasn't for another couple movies.
I
think they got some practice drawing flying things, which is very difficult. For artists to imagine a human body that can fly, you have to create a whole body language for that.
Celine does it every day in concert now.
Does she?
I don't know. I think they cut it out of the show, but she did.
Well, there's a difference between stuck in a harness and free flying, but yes. They didn't have that back then either.
Yeah.
So I think it was, again, one of those experiments that they're like, well, let's see if we can't draw flying things.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of flying things in this because they had the Pegasus that fly also and
very mythical.
The cherubs and things. So.
Yeah, I think the favorite part of it wasn't necessarily the song, would have been, though, the sound waves, you know, that like you get to see them being animated for the first time. And we see that so much nowadays. But nowadays we're seeing computer animation that automatically does it for you. You know, you see it with like iTunes Visualizer and all those kinds of things as well. That I think the fact that they were doing it all by hand back then of what the music would have been like, and they, you know, had to figure it all out like that. that's pretty dang cool.
Yeah, that was impressive.
In the 1940s, that would have blown me away. It still blows me away today, though. Like, I don't know if you ever saw this, but I used to have a projector set up so that I had, like, a huge wall full of projection, and I would hook it up to iTunes Visualizer, and I would, like, watch that literally for 4 hours a day while I was cleaning and getting ready for work. And
were you high at the time?
No, this is just what I did before going to work.
Pop a couple Ambien and watch the iTunes Visualizer wall.
No, ma'am. I would be getting my coffee on. I would be watching the Visualizer. I would be listening.
You know, we all have a process. You know, what some people have to do to get going in the morning.
I tell you, I could do it in here. This is reinvigorating.
You're not changing the office into the Visualizer.
Do a Visualizer wall?
No.
Oh, it'd be so good. Oh, it'd be so good. I love it. But, I was glad that they put an intermission in for me. That was nice to
random. And I honestly, again, I don't remember that as a kid. I don't remember there being an intermission.
No.
And not that it wasn't there. Maybe I just didn't notice it. But also, it's not even like I've watched plenty of musicals on recordings that have an intermission.
Yeah.
And it shows intermission here, you mm-hmm. know, kind of thing. And it gives you a chance to do the interlude at the second act.
Yeah.
But this one, literally they go, and now we'll have an intermission. And you literally watch the entire orchestra get up and walk off stage. Yeah. And the ladies are like in their purses and like right? fixing their hats as they walk. And you're like, what am I watching? What is going on? And then they all have to come back in and retune. And I'm like, this is the weirdest thing Disney ever put in a movie. Like, yeah. I don't care to watch an actual intermission, you right, know?
Right.
Weird.
Yeah. Well, I guess this is our intermission. Oh.
We will now have a 15-minute intermission, and we will talk to you again about the end of the movie. Actually, I just wanted to jump really quick to the end. Night on Bald Mountain is, if after Sorcerer Mickey, one of the most recognizable parts of Fantasia, with fun fact for people that don't know, Chernabog is the name of the personification of Satan at the end of Fantasia.
Oh.
So he's the big winged guy with the horns.
Oh.
Calling up the dead spirits and whatnot.
Wow.
Chernabog. You know, in case you get that question on Jeopardy, there's your answer. And the animator actually looked at Bela Lugosi, who played Dracula in some of the silent movies, as inspiration for Chernabog's movements and things like that. So you can tell he's very dramatic with his hands and his facial expressions and things like that. I just think he's a cool character. And in a show that doesn't have a lot of leading characters,
yeah,
it is pretty impressive.
Yeah, it was. Say. It was a great way to finish off the movie.
Right?
Yeah, it scared me.
Oh?
Devil went down to Georgia right there.
But, anyway, this has been just us chatting about movie number 3, Fantasia, in our long list of movies we have to get through. Check your spit valves before you leave. But follow my perfectly sculpted 2-finger Disney point to the exit, and we'll see you next time on the Obscure Disney Podcast.